Welcome to the Optimal Body Podcast. I'm Doc Jen.
And I'm Dr. Dom, and we are doctors of physical therapy, bringing you the body tips and PT pearls to help you begin to understand your body, relieve your pains and restrictions, and answer your questions.
Along with expert guests, our goal of the Optimal Body Podcast is to help you discover what optimal means within your own body. Let's dive in.
All right, Jen and I are so excited to welcome in our next guest, Dr. Jason Park, because he's another doctor of physical therapy. And specifically, he's a sports clinical specialist, and he's a good friend of both of ours. Jason specifically works with MMA fighters, so really high-level combat athletes. And what we really appreciate about Jason is he just comes back around to that foundation. No matter what level you're at, it can always benefit you to come back around and practice that foundational level of fitness, that foundational level of movement. So we're going to talk a lot about how that applies to his athletes, but also how that might apply to you and the everyday person. So listen up, Jason has so many amazing tips.
All right, I am so excited to welcome our friend, Jason Park, Dr. Jason Park, another fellow physical therapist. I always love having my physical therapist on, one, because it's people I get to learn from and continue like this ongoing communication and continuing education just through conversation, which I think is a really cool thing. And I'm blessed to have incredible friends like you, Jason. So can you just introduce yourself for people?
Okay. Thank you for having me. My name is Dr. Jason Park. I'm a physical therapist, board certified sports clinical specialist in the field of physical therapy. I also operate as a strength and conditioning coach, as well as a Muay Thai coach and boxing coach for some of the top UFC and Bellator athletes.
Wow.
So, you know, you were one of the first people I met when I came out here to Los Angeles, and I came and observed you with these fighters, and, you know, these guys are elite athletes, or at least they're seen as elite athletes. And the thing that I notice is the stuff that you work with them on is like really basic stuff a lot of the times. And I'm like, come on, Jason, when are we going to get into the crazy kicks and whatnot? But you would just rep and rep and rep a lot of the basics. Like, can you talk about that kind of approach when you're working with some of these elite athletes?
Yeah. So I think, you know, one of the biggest things that people mistake with, you know, these top performers, and we can use the example of professional athletes and professional MMA fighters, you know, to describe this, is that everything is supposed to be so intense, and you have to do more and more and more to kind of replicate what they do to get good. And, you know, I think from our experience at Cohort Performance, working with numerous professional athletes across all sports, is that actually it's the opposite. We usually go slower. We go much more, you know, to the foundation and to the basics. And we drill those things over and over and over again until it becomes part of their second nature. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean,
and you know, that's one of the lessons that I think is so big to, you know, bring back to all of us.
Yeah, I think that's something that is so incredibly important for people to just start to realize and see. It's like coming back to that foundation, coming back to the fundamentals. That's what I actually appreciated about gymnastics training. We would always see, you know, a lot of cheerleaders, not to dig on cheerleaders or anything, but it was just different. What I observed from my observation was different type of training, where they would come in and kind of want to learn all the cool flips and throw themselves into it really early, where gymnastics, it's like we powered on the basics. Like, we had to get a perfect handstand, perfect cartwheel before you started to really go into the higher level stuff. And I think it made us more powerful athletes, safer athletes. And I think that's something that, you know, even for everyday humans, even if you're not going and working toward a sport or toward being the best athlete, it's something to continue to remember, because we are going to be in instances where we need to run after a child or pick up something heavy. And if we can break down those fundamentals, I think that's so important. So what I want to talk about is, what would you say are some of those fundamentals? Like, what are some of those basic foundational patterns that you believe everyone kind of needs?
Well, you know, I think the great thing is in that both in the fitness world and it's starting to show more and more in the clinical world is there's no real secret, right? It's out there. You have to know how to squat and you have to know how to hinge. Those are our two basic lower body movements. And, you know, before I go on to what we do on the upper body, it's, you know, the lower body is such a crucial part. And we look at single leg strength as such a strong metric in how athletic our athletes are and how much they can really put out an output that's sustainable. Mm-hmm. So first off, single leg strength is really important. Leg strength as a whole is very important. And those two expressions of it are in the hinge and in the squat, right? And that's a spectrum. And then we have, you know, I came from a background of powerlifting as a base for my strength and conditioning program when I was an athlete. And so I really believe in the idea of the big three and the big three assistance exercises, which really boil down to, you know, doing a horizontal push and a pull and a vertical push and a pull. And mm-hmm. and those things are all there as basics to our human movement. And then we have rotation, which is there in everything we do in sports. Part in that is to not rotate when you don't want to, anti-rotation. And then you have to know how to jump and run and sprint. And the one thing I think that also can sometimes create a lot of complexity, but I tried never to forget this, is we have to remember how to breathe and we have to remember how to get horizontal, which includes, you know, crawling, laying on your back and transitioning to your side and rolling. And those are things that we see quite often in our grappling athletes, right? Jiu-jitsu, wrestling. And it's something that we've had work with in our tactical field athletes as well. So, you know, if they have to do it, we as humans also have to do it because that's what we grew up doing as babies.
Yes. Love that. Love taking it back to the baby because, like, Jen and I will say that often, like, how did we develop as a baby? Can you do all those things? And if you can't do some of the first things a baby learns how to do, then why the heck are you doing jumping kicks or handstands or whatever it is? So say we learn all these foundations, then what's the practice of translating that into a sport or something specific, right, for the person?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think one of the biggest things that you learn as an athlete is you can't get good at any skill with only 100 reps. It's thousands and thousands of reps consistently being trained every day. Right? Now, that doesn't have to be confused with intensity. We do have to showcase it and express it with intensity. Right? That could be speed, acceleration, how hard I'm trying to throw something. But if I only practice it with intensity or effort, I'm never really going to fully understand that movement technique. And that's kind of what we look at when we look at our sports performance and human performance programs, is taking the ideas and the principles that we have developing as athletes and developing athletes, in that you do have to practice things often. As one of my mentors and coaches, Will Chung, says, you have to drill the skill with consistency. But don't confuse that with always doing it with intensity, because that's not sustainable.
Totally. And I love, even with your current training that you were doing and you were telling me of, one of the things that you were drilling before you even went into a kettlebell swing. And you were shocked yourself to see, why am I still doing this over and over? Like, can't we progress yet? And yet your mentor and your coach was having you drill the basics. What was that?
Yeah. So, you know, I've had a long experience with kettlebells and been a part of lots of different seminars, but never really been coached one-on-one myself, right? And so one of the things I took on the advantage with one of my friends and really close friends, Dr. Mark Chang, who is, you know, one of Strong First's top instructors and, you know, learned directly from Pavel himself. was he always mentioned the idea that every repetition should be rehabilitative and therapeutic. And that's something that, you know, I think is a message that gets missed quite a lot, especially in the fitness world, is where everything has to be a little bit harder with intensity. Mm. And that doesn't mean that it has to be soft. Training can still be hard, but, you know, doing it with such fullness of the expression of the movement and connecting your body to it, that it is a therapeutic movement, even though it's still training and stressing the body. And so what he did, simply when I said, like, I had trouble with cleans and snatches, you know, I would start hitting a plateau and, you know, like everyone else, have that kettlebell slam onto my wrist because I lost control of it. Because, you know, if you're not driving with a full motion, sometimes you're hoisting that weight up and then it's going to slam back down on you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he took me through 3 sessions and it was basically just deadlifting with 3 different kettlebells of different weights and just 5 repetitions, 5 repetitions, 5 repetitions. But each time really trying to integrate, you know, rooting through the floor with my feet, you know, feeling that connection to my hips, feeling my quads turn on and connecting the feet to my hips through my knee and my thigh. And, you know, just feeling this fullness of connection. And, you know, the different weights and the different speeds of doing the deadlifts were all just ways to kind of express that movement technique in a different way, to make sure that I know how to own and control it, instead of letting, as a lot of people will say, don't let the weight control you. Mm-hmm. You have to control the weight.
I don't know if it's because you're a martial artist, but I'm getting a lot of Karate Kid things coming in my head of him just painting the fence time after time. Painting the fence,
yeah.
Painting the fence. And he's just like, why in the heck am I painting the fence? And then the first time he goes to throw a strike at him, he blocks him. And it's just like, oh my gosh, I did this enough times that my body's now remembering it within maybe a fight or flight situation, like an actual mm-hmm. fight. When that inner beast takes over, those patterns are now programmed in. So I really like that approach. And similar to you, I've never actually been trained in kettlebells. And so often people will be like, oh, you're doing this. And I can't even feel it because of my patterning right now. So maybe I have to do something similar to what you did.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that's one of the hardest things in our field, is that we're always looking for the new novel thing. Mm-hmm. But all the techniques are laid out there. And, you know, I'm going to give an analogy back into martial arts and say, like, okay, what makes someone who is a really good jiu-jitsu practitioner and a not good jiu-jitsu practitioner? It's not that they have more moves. It's not like they have so many more techniques. All the techniques are pretty much laid out there. You can learn them any which day, right? But it's how well they can put it to use in the context that they find themselves in. Mm-hmm. That's just from drilling that skill and trying it in different scenarios. And it's the same thing with, I think you can see it in almost all the martial arts that are in active full contact competition, whether it's boxing or Muay Thai, you know, is that they are really simple in the techniques that they have. It's how we express them that's different. And I think it's because that sports, and especially in martial arts in full contact competition, it's one that you can practice trying to create the output that you want, whether it's, you know, moving someone, hitting someone, throwing someone with someone who does not want to be thrown or moved, right? And so you're actually seeing, how can I, in this variable situation, which we find ourselves in life, can I create an output that I want? And that's what I look at with strength and conditioning and sports performance, is that it's a way for us to safely also express that, right? Like, how empowering is it that I look at a weight and go, okay, I think it's about this heavy. Where will I grab it? Okay, if I position myself correctly, if I root myself into the ground, if I connect my arms, right, which is grabbing that weight, to my shoulders, to my hips, to my feet, I can lift it. and I can create the effect that I want with confidence. That's what I think when you look at sports, strength and conditioning that we all share, is that we want to learn that how to control our body to create an effect outside of our body.
And that is essentially everything that we as therapists are hopefully doing with clients as well, right? We want to create this different type of effect within the body. And I think that's the step that not everyone wants to take. It's like, well, what is the thing that you're going to do to fix me? Rather than how am I going to build that connection so that I can move in all different types of scenarios, no matter what life throws at me, no matter what heavy bag I need to lift up to get into the airplane or to lift my kid in the car seat, or, you know, there's life situations gets heavy and it puts us in awkward positions. And if we hammer in those basics, build those connections, exactly like you're saying, I mean, how long were you doing those deadlifts for before you even started to do more advanced kettlebell stuff?
Years. And you know, and let me put the example that younger me also tried to do those things, those complex things early. Mm-hmm. And that usually led me to early types of overuse injuries, and also led to more disappointment because I would soon find a lower ceiling and I would be stuck there and have to rebuild back, you know, go back and try to build it up just so that if I had gone slower and more consistently, there would be a higher ceiling for me to reach. Mm-hmm. Might have taken a little bit longer, but I wouldn't have had that frustration of being stuck somewhere and not knowing how to pass it and having to go back down and rebuild my foundation again.
So, you know, talking about the foundation and training and everything is all great and dandy, right? But we're dealing with fighters, and an inherent risk in fighting is injury. I guess in your world with who you train, but also in life, there's injury. So with fighters, especially people who are just so intense and wanting to get after it, how do you deal with someone, say, after a fight when they may have some injuries to nurse and you still want to be able to address some of these basics?
Well, one good thing is the higher and higher up you go, the top athletes understand how important it is to work the basics on their own. My job is to almost be a guide instead of a teacher, right? Mm-hmm. It's to guide them and make sure that they're basically training a full literacy of a technique, right? Trying different phrases, different sentences to express that same movement. Right. So it wouldn't work just to say work the jab that everyone knows is such a basic movement, right? It's our first movement, like squat is to our fitness world. But if I just work the jab by itself, you know, am I teaching them how they're going to have to experience it in life? Maybe it's to work that jab, but maybe after a block and then going back to your jab, or you know, after a kick and then going back to your jab, or maybe using the jab first and then kicking afterwards. So just, I usually like to say that for my athletes, you know, it's not just to be good enough at a language to be able to read, write, or talk in it, right? I think a lot of people, when they learn a new language, they say, wow, I learned a few words, or I learned a few phrases. I know how to speak that language. Mm-hmm. And if I was to take that analogy further, I want my athletes, and this extends even to my clients who are not professional athletes, but are looking to find the athletic version of themselves, they're also athletes in my book. And I say, I want my athletes to be able to express the movements that they want like a rapper, being able to not just, you know, have such a good control of the language to be able to write in it or to rhyme in it, but to also be able to change rhythm, change speed, stop on a dime, you know, and go back. I love hip hop, so I always use that as my example. But I want them to be like the flowiest, coolest, dopest rapper in the use of that language. And that language is movement.
That's so beautiful. I mean, that's like dancing. That reminds me of dancing, you know, and even gymnastics. I remember coming out of gymnastics and it's almost like the world is open. You have so much body awareness, you can almost go into any sport. And I just so appreciate the control of my body and the awareness within so many various positions that gymnastics allowed me. And I think that's why I gravitated toward kinesiology and human movement and, you know, physical therapy and so on and so forth. And it's a continued learning process, but it's like, I want people to fall in love with the movement, exactly like you said, you know, and be able to translate it in so many different areas within their body. Wouldn't that be so beautiful?
Yeah. I mean, this takes me back to, you know, one of our first conversations that we had together, and we were talking about human movement, strength training. And I remember I was so stunned because you and I are both physical therapists, but if you were to look at our Instagram profiles and look at how we want to build strength, train movement, people will see the commonalities if they really look, but it looks on paper, complete black and white, right? You love gymnastics, inversions, a lot of body weight work, breath work. Me, it's like, I like to lift heavy things, you know, sprint, run, you know, obviously in my martial art, like kick things, punch things. But the way we describe movement and how to learn the skill of controlling it and then expressing it with different implements, whether it's a kettlebell or heavy weight or body weight, was the same. You know, it's progressive overload, but not just in terms of resistance, but also in terms of tempo, rhythm, you know, different positionings. And that's what I found, why I felt so connected with you, is like, it doesn't matter the implement, it's the philosophy of movement.
Mm-hmm. That is such a powerful line. And I think that points towards a lot of what I would say are the issues with the fitness and the health and fitness space, is that everybody, like you said, thinks that what they do is novel. And in reality, it all comes down to very similar principles done slightly differently. And, you know, same as in the context of fighters or athletes or a basketball athlete or, you know, a human, our language of movement is going to be completely individual based on those experiences. Yes. And you as the guide are, just teaching them to slightly differently express that, so that when they get into a situation where crap hits the fan, they may be able to still express it as beautifully as if they were in a controlled environment.
Two quotes that were really pivotal for me when I started my whole coaching career. This is like right when I was transitioning from being an athlete to being graduate school as a physical therapist, you know, continuing my role as a strength and conditioning coach, and then also starting to coach more professional MMA fighters and striking, was two quotes. And one is from the military, which is, slow is smooth, smooth is fast. And that resonated so well into me in how to, you know, be able to learn how to sprint. You have to just learn how to run, and you have to learn how to run well, and you have to learn how to jump and know how to create force fast. But you have to first make it smooth, and the way to make it smooth is slow, and that will be the path to becoming fast.
Totally.
And another, and I know it, these two are the things that kind of built into my philosophy. And to your point, Dom, is like how I can convince my fighters to constantly slow it down, because I have faith in their athleticism and their ability to go fast once they get down these particulars, right? And the other quote, you know, is from Guru Dan Inosanto, who's a world famous martial artist, was a teacher and a student of Bruce Lee. And he's always said, don't hide your inadequacies with speed. And he added on to that, speed is not your friend if you don't know what you're doing. And those two quotes have always like stood in my mind whenever I'm coaching.
Mic drop. Like, that is everything. Slowing down the movement is the most uncomfortable thing for people because it actually makes you work a lot harder and connect to the places that you've been disconnected from.
Yes.
And so that's like, for me personally too, why I fell in love with Pilates training. And I loved having CrossFitters in my Pilates classes, because seeing these people who could do huge explosive movements, but then we get them onto a Pilates machine and they're shaking and they're like, why are the women better than me right now?
That's me.
And it was,
that's me as well.
I'm with you, Jason.
But it lit me up, because then I know you're connecting the dots again. You're coming back into the body.
And I think it's so important to be able to take your body into a place that you're not comfortable swimming in, right?
Yes.
And that could be in the shallow end or in the deep end, to be honest.
Yep.
You know, some people like swimming in the deep open waters is the scariest thing that can be. But there are benefits to swimming in open waters that aren't there in the pool, right? There's waves and currents if you know how to read it. And then if you take that away, you're taking away that person's advantage. Whereas other people only want to be in stationary water. And I think it's the same thing with intensity and speed. Like I'm one that doesn't like high repetition workouts. I want to go low rep, high sets, and go for strength and speed. And so when you take me to a Pilates workout, it takes me into deep waters.
Yeah.
And people will laugh because it seems so foundational that how can this low load be so scary for you? But it's like, oh, we got to stay in here for a volume load that I'm not used to. And it's going to take, that's the deep, scary waters for me as an athlete.
And I think that's where the second quote you gave us comes in. Don't hide those inadequacies with speed. Don't speed through those deep waters. Let yourself struggle in them for a little bit and let yourself learn how to navigate those. And that's how you're going to add into that complete language of yours.
Yeah. I mean, and that's
exactly
some of my favorite trainers even to watch on social media are the ones who are breaking it down so slowly. Like, here's your goblet squat, but you're not going to just goblet squat it out, right? You're not going to just hold that weight and drop down and up and just use momentum to bounce. You're actually going to stabilize, understand where you're engaging from your lats and your shoulder blades, understand what your core is doing, and then go really slow on the way down and really slow on the way up. And I love watching it because it's just beautiful movement.
Absolutely.
And where do you see is like the connection between people going in higher levels or even just everyday people working toward building into a better self and injury? As a physical therapist, because you kind of work on both sides where you're doing strength training, but you're also a physical therapist. So where do you see is something that people really get to focus on?
Well, you know, for me, you know, during my clinical career and in my clinical training in graduate school and residency, you know, it was to really understand everything that we need to provide in sports medicine and human movement to help people recover from injuries, right? Whether it's surgery or overuse injuries. And also then start to transition to how can I help prevent or create a stronger body so those injuries don't come about. And now I came full circle and kind of going back to a mainly strength and conditioning role with, you know, the sports science and the clinical mindset behind all these exercises. And so one of the big things that I always look for when I'm working with people is, one, to improve their weaknesses, which is the low-hanging fruit. And usually that's making them doing things that they're not typically doing in their sport. And that could be even whatever it is in their daily life that they're expressing themselves. So even an office worker, right, their sport is professionally sitting at a chair, typing, you know, being in meetings and being in those postures. And so to put it simply, to improve on their weaknesses is to get them out of those positions and spend time doing those positions, right? And something simple as like a 2-to-1 ratio of a horizontal pull to a push, just to kind of strengthen all those muscles in their back and get their shoulders used to moving and relaxing the neck because they're so spent pitched forward on their shoulders. You know, another thing would be, you know, really expressing triple extension, right? Because so often we spend time, whether I'm a jiu-jitsu athlete who's a lot of time in triple flexion, or again, I'm an office worker And I am also in triple flexion, spending time expressing triple extension, learning how to be on the tips of their toes, how to be with their quads fully active and their knees straight. And also, obviously, you know, coming from USC and training with Dr. Powers, you know, having those glutes on and going to hip extension. So it's spending time in the places that you're not used to spending. And then also the last part being for sports performance is strengthening what you're good at.
I think that's great to kind of come full circle in that and, you know, touch again on that variability. What is it that you're doing most? And are you making sure that you scatter in the things that you don't do as much? And that is, like you said, some low-hanging fruit and an easy way to find growth in your own body. If people are wanting to learn more, if people are wanting to learn more from you, where can they find some of the things you're doing or putting out right now, Jason?
So we're putting on a full online program, and this is kind of like a, almost like an online gym where, you know, they're going through different classes, also have private lessons with us. And it's geared towards the martial artists called MMA Performance Clinics. It's designed for from people who just love to take jiu-jitsu classes or Muay Thai classes to our top athletes, right? And it's kind of a dream to be able to bring back the lessons that we're working on with our top performers, like our top UFC and Bellator athletes, and be able to bring those lessons and simplify the process, right? Create simplicity, which is not the easiest thing, and prevent people from being so all over the place with what they have to do each day, because we only have so much time per day to really work on our bodies. And then we also have on our website at coreartperformance.com our online program for where we do virtual training sessions and virtual consults for sports medicine and sports performance for both our athletes and the people who are looking to find their inner athleticism.
I love that. And I hope everyone, especially after listening to this podcast, you know, really gets excited about exploring that discomfort, exploring, you know, slowing it down and learning and becoming athletic in whatever sense that is, you know, for what we need just to be human. So it's incredible. And of course, we're going to link that up in the show notes, guys. Go check it out. Go get connected. Jason is truly a master at what he does, continues to learn and be a student, which is why I appreciate you so much. You're just so open and continuing to learn. And I love our conversations every time we get together. So thank you, Jason, for being a force in the therapy world, for showing how it's done and continuing to spread the word and educate not only in the elite levels and the professional levels, but also for the everyday person. You're doing amazing work.
Thank you. Thank you.
And there we have it, yet another amazing guest on the Optimal Body Podcast. So now what we ask of you, if you loved any bit of that or resonated with it, go share it out, share it with a friend, share it on your social media, because you know there are more people out there that would resonate with it just the same. Also, subscribe, rate, review on your favorite podcast app so we know what you want to learn or other guests that you think we should bring on for you in the future. Keep tuning in to find your optimal body.